Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redmond. Today's interview is with oil painter Karen Wagner. She makes these amazing paintings of outdoor scenes, often beautiful Florida trees, and lately she's been making paintings of the sky. Her oil paintings are so realistic, you'd think that they are photographs. Be sure and visit my website at SuzanneRedmond.com to see some photos of her work. This is Karen Wagner. Welcome, Karen. I'm really happy to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity, Suzanne. Thank you.
Oh, this is great. I've known you for a couple of years, and I've just been amazed by your oil paintings. They're just beautiful and stunning, and I've seen you at quite a few galleries over the last couple of years. So we'll talk about that, but I wanted to first get a little background about when did you start making art? When did it first come into your life?
When I was 5 years old.
Yay!
In kindergarten, we were all asked to do a self-portrait. And the teacher took mine around to all of the other classrooms to show it off. And that was my moment. It was, I come from a family of eight. And so individual attention was, fairly minimal.
Ah, okay.
And so having a teacher focus on me and give me praise was a novelty for sure, but it was, a little light bulb turning on. Oh, maybe I'm good at this.
Oh, that's so great. That's yeah. Wonderful to have such early encouragement. And I get
wonderful.
That. I was a family of five kids and we were all a year apart. So we had to be loud to be heard.
Exactly. Loud and rowdy. So,
yes.
And if you're not, then you do kind of go into the background a little bit. But
right. Yeah. Where was it that you grew up?
Well, my father was a Navy man. So all over the place. I started off in Norfolk, Virginia, and then
okay.
We moved to California and then New Jersey, and then we landed in Florida. So I would say Florida when I was about 12. Became my home. So that, I think that makes me a native now, but
I'm a native, but there aren't that many. So I think you can call yourself a native.
there are very few natives, except possibly the Native Indians. I don't know.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So when you were in middle school and high school in Florida, did you start taking art classes?
Our public high schools don't have a lot of art. Right.
Or unfortunately.
So, but I did have an art teacher in high school who took a personal interest and she was lovely. And anytime I did anything that she thought was substandard, she would let me know. She was awesome. And she, when I got ready to go to college, she actually gave me a whole box full of art supplies, paints and brushes and everything. She really was an inspiration from very early on.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, that's great. And did you go to pursue art when you went to college?
I did, but it was, a small college. My initial choice was a small college in rural Tennessee, and it was not a good choice. Their art program was super minimal. And then
okay.
I left there and went to Tampa Technical in Tampa, Florida. And
okay.
That was interesting, but not a good fit either. And then I went to the Fort Lauderdale Art Institute, and I stayed put there until I got my associates.
Okay, so it took you three tries, but you found your spot.
Yeah, I did. It was for advertising design. It was a practical course. I had actually had an offer from somebody to fund a trip to Paris to study at the School of the Louvre at the time.
Wow.
But then he went to jail.
Oh.
I wasn't able to capitalize on
that. Oh, my gosh. There's a bigger part of the story there that we're not hearing, I think.
No, I wasn't really aware of his criminal nature, I guess.
Well, so
the Art Institute
that.
Is where I wound up.
Okay. All right. So did you work in the advertising field once you got out of school?
I did. And I did a couple of stints down at some big design agencies down in Miami, Weaver Silverstein. I got to work on the Michael Dukakis presidential campaign.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he didn't win. I don't think it was my fault, though. I think it was George H.W. that beat him on that one. But so, and then I did, you know, some different Doral Saturnia, different brochures, that sort of thing for them. And then I got a full-time job with a firm called Certified Tours that did all of the Delta advertising, Delta Dream Vacations.
Oh, so you did some good national accounts.
Yeah, so I had some interesting, you know, interesting experiences before I decided that the corporate world wasn't really my cup of tea. So
okay,
just an awful lot of, you know, little infighting. You know, that you don't necessarily find when you're, you know, working in your own studio and trying to sell your own work. So
Right. Did you pursue another type of job, or did you go straight into, like, freelancing your art after you left the corporate world?
Well, the Art Institute at the time had a book, basically. You could go and sign in there for freelance work.
Oh, great.
It was really good. And one of the first contacts was, it was Pier 66 at the time. I think it might be a Marriott or something now.
Mm-hmm.
But the Pier 66 Hotel was looking for someone to do a mural. And I went.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, it was wonderful. That was really the start of my mural career, which I did for a lot of years. It built slowly, but it finally did get to the point where I was able to support myself on the mural work.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, that was really lovely.
And at this time, like, what year was that? Because are we talking indoor murals or the outdoor ones that we have that you see around towns right now?
Right. I did not do any outdoor ones.
Okay.
For the corporate entities. I did a few privately for people.
In homes?
Mm-hmm. In homes. And weirdly enough, I actually had one on a driveway once. It was somebody who, I believe she was the publisher of the Sun Sentinel. And she had this massive concrete driveway. And she had me paint all of the foliage that was surrounding her driveway.
Oh, beautiful.
Onto the driveway.
Oh, and wow. That's really great.
That was really a lot of fun. So I think that was my first outdoor one.
Okay.
But you know, when you're driving on it all the time, that it probably doesn't have a super long life.
Yeah.
So I did do, you know, some poolside ones. And it turned out that the best medium for that was actually oil paints.
Oh, okay.
That had the most longevity. And I never knew that until I started calling up different paint companies to find out what would be the most light, fast, and have the best longevity. So.
Oh, right. So sitting out in the sun day after day and in the Florida heat. I gotcha. Okay. So you created quite a nice career for yourself doing murals then.
I did. And, you know, I had some very interesting ones also. Actually, another outdoor one was, I don't know if you remember the nightclub Confetti's in Fort Lauderdale.
No, I don't.
Okay, so that was on, I believe it was Oakland Park Boulevard, and they had a 16-foot, like a tower almost as their entrance, and they hired me to do a mural on the exterior of that. And
oh,
that was
wow.
The first time that I had to climb, I think it was 4 levels of scaffolding.
Oh, my gosh.
It tied off, and every time the wind blew, it would shift back and forth.
Oh, my.
So that was a little nerve-wracking, but yeah, it was a pretty good time, I have to say. And then unfortunately the economy took a downward turn.
Oh, okay.
Really around 2001, which I'm going to say unfortunately, but fortunately, because it helped turn me in the direction of the paintings that I'm doing now. So.
Okay. All right. When you first started doing the paintings, did it start with the same style or subject matter that you're doing right now?
Oh, that's a good question. That is a very good question. when I was doing most of my interior murals, it was for some very grand homes. And okay. mostly what they wanted, were European scenes at the time.
Okay.
That's not the way it is right now, but at the time, it mm-hmm. was a lot of Italian gardens and French gardens and that sort of thing. And so, yes, the first few that I did were along those lines, but then I pretty rapidly switched to people, and
okay.
the subject was literacy, because I felt like, you know, the worlds that open up when you read a book are hugely important. So I did those, but each one of them took a few months.
Okay.
And then I started, you know, looking around me, and I had always wanted to be somewhere other than Florida, weirdly, because of the mountains and the change of scene that I always preferred.
Right. So you were able to see that once in a while, depending on where you lived. Yeah, I didn't grow up with that, being a native, so I didn't miss it.
Right. And, you know, it took me a little while, but with my kids, we started doing a lot of hiking.
Okay.
And I started to discover parts of Florida that I did not know existed. You know, when you get out under these oak hammocks, or, you know, these plains full of saw palmettos and slash pines, and it had its own magic.
It really does. Yeah.
It does. And canoeing along the Loxahatchee,
mm-hmm.
Tubing on the Itchituckney, and canoeing on the Santa Fe,
yeah.
I discovered a completely different Florida from the one that I thought existed, which was mostly, you know, homes and highway is how it seemed to me.
Well, and that's, unfortunately, that's a lot what we see. I grew up on the Banana River in Cocoa Beach, and so we would paddle our surfboards over to the islands and run around on the islands. And so I grew up with the live oaks and the mangroves and seeing the manatees and the porpoises. And so it wasn't until I moved down to Palm Beach County where it's, you know, it's concrete, it's highways, it's
right.
And so I miss it. And so whenever I do go hiking or go into the woods or kayaking, I call it old time Florida. Well, it still exists. You know, it didn't disappear. I just kind of missed it for a few years and had to get back into it. So I understand what you're saying, because we have so much beauty here with, you know, there's water everywhere, and you don't have to live oceanfront to get to the water with all our rivers and everything. Yeah.
And when you go to the rivers, you get to see trees along with the river. You know,
the
oceanfront is lovely, of course, and that's what brings a lot of tourists away. And I love the ocean, but I really particularly connect with the trees.
Yeah.
And so when you're on the Loxahatchee and you are, you know, drifting down all those little hairpin turns and you see all the towering cypress and the ferns, that to me is just like what you said, old time Florida.
Yeah,
it just like goes back, mm-hmm. you know, thousands of years.
Right. So you started. Painting the trees as your subject matter then.
Actually, the very first tree that I painted was I had gone down to Fairchild Gardens
mm-hmm.
to see their Chihuly exhibit.
And oh, okay.
It was such a beautiful night, just, you know, temperate, and they had some chamber musicians playing, and I was walking through the gardens.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, it was absolutely gorgeous. But there was this alley of trees, and there were thousands of zebra butterflies around them. Thousands.
Oh, wow.
And the smell is what drew me to it, and it turned out they were orange jasmine trees, and this was before everybody had a camera on their phone, so I didn't take any photos. And I tried to go back, and Fairchild is only open in the evenings when they have an exhibit. So I couldn't get that gorgeous twilight feel.
Yeah.
And so I actually just pretend. I took some daytime photos of the trees and tried to recreate the twilight feeling from memory.
Oh,
so that
wow.
was my first big tree. That was my, you know, it took 6 months to complete that, maybe because I had to do so much imagining, but
yeah.
that was that was what launched my tree series. So.
That's great. Do you remember how large that first painting was?
About 7.5 feet by 7 feet.
Yeah, that's very large.
It's big. And then, you know, I did one in moonlight, oak sapling in moonlight. And again, I don't have good photography skills, so I had to have my husband out there holding a flashlight on the trees.
Oh, yeah.
To take photographs of it. That was an interesting one. And
isn't it? Yeah. It's great how we get our family members to help us with things.
It is very helpful to have willing family members.
Right.
You know, I don't know if your family members are helpful in that regard, but mine kind of go in and out of their helpful stages. So.
Well, you know, it's the teenagers. They're busy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And what were your plans when you first started making these paintings? Had you already made some contacts with some galleries, or, you know, what were you going to do with a 7-foot by 7-foot painting?
That's a great question, because I wasn't really thinking in any way practically, because how do you ship a painting that large?
Right.
How do you transport it? I really wasn't thinking. So when I got through with that first one and I discovered how challenging it was going to be to get it moved around, I went a little bit smaller for the next few. And
okay.
Then after I had, I think I had 5 or 6 pieces complete, I started reaching out by email to different galleries.
Great.
And it was shocking to me when a New York gallery responded, because I have to say, most of my emails, when they went out, just fell into a black hole. People would not respond at all. They wouldn't say no thank you. They wouldn't say, you know, keep up the good work. There was
not even an acknowledgement.
Right.
Yeah.
So she actually responded and said she wasn't sure she would like them, but if I wanted to send her a few, I could. And I said, no, I'll bring them to you. Because I thought, you know what, I want to see her face.
Yeah.
When she, mm-hmm. And plus sending my babies off in a box. Anyway.
That
so
is
I had
scary.
Some,
yeah.
It was, you know, it was a new, I was new to the whole art world at that point.
Okay.
And I had a friend build me a custom box that I put on an airplane in the cargo hold. And I got to New York and got my Wheaties in the morning, because the box was really heavy.
Yeah.
And I dragged that all the way to the Chelsea District. And,
oh my gosh.
And the Sherry French Gallery. And she was awesome, because she looked at it and said she loved them and she would include them in her next show. And that's unfortunately,
fabulous.
Well, it was fabulous,
yeah.
But it only lasted 6 months and then she went out of business.
Oh, darn.
It was so sad. It was 2008.
Ooh,
and that's
the magic
when
year. Yep.
Yeah. And she had been in business for 26 years.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, she would have been a good bet for anybody.
Yeah. So that was really sad. And so she closed her doors and I started looking at that point for other galleries, and all of them that responded said, you know, thank you so much for your submission. We're not taking on any new artists right now. We're trying to keep the artists we have, you know, occupied and give them the work.
Right.
And so that, you know, it took quite a while before things started to turn back around again. So.
Mm. That must have been the saddest day when you had to pack up those paintings and bring them back to Florida.
It was. It really was. Because I thought, a New York gallery, what can be better than that?
Right.
Everything's going to be fabulous now, which was unrealistic. Now, you know, I'm a few years older and wiser, but you don't put all of your eggs in one basket ever.
Right.
But it was, I guess, a roller coaster, you know, very, very exciting and then very sad.
Right. But kudos to you for just getting out there and doing it and saying, well, I'll figure this out and I'll have someone build a box and we'll make this happen. I mean, that's fantastic. You know, not everybody would do that.
I was lucky to have a friend who would do that.
Yeah. So what was your next step? Then you brought him back to Florida. Then what did you do?
So it really was from that point on trying to figure out how to reconnect with a gallery that would accept new artists. And I took a few courses. I did the Creative Capital Workshop.
Great.
And I connected with the Cultural Council and Rena Blades, who was the CEO at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the words of advice that she gave me was, start local. She said, don't try to expand your circle yet. Try to make connections in your local area first. And then step into the wider world. So really, the advice that I got from so many sources was, make your connections locally. Just attend the gallery openings that you can, which is challenging when you have children.
Right.
You have to go out in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm a bit of an introvert, so it's always more comfortable for me to stay home and read a book than it is for me to go out to the openings.
Right.
But over time, you do meet enough people so that it becomes less uncomfortable. You can,
right,
you know, you see lots of familiar faces and you can, you know, have conversations with people that you are comfortable with.
Right. So, and here's the hint for everybody out there. There's so many artists that are introverts. And yes. So they're happy to talk to you, as happy as you are to talk to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, you will discover that some of the people that you see out and about are far less comfortable with that than they appear to be. So even curators, I have met multiple curators,
mm-hmm,
who were actually happy to be rescued with a conversation.
That's great.
Because they are just as uncomfortable as you are. So. So it's kind of nice, you know, when you meet up with fellow introverts and you can say, oh my gosh, isn't this painful? And you can relate to each other that way.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's good that you took the step and you were brave enough to get out there. And once you're out there, it's not so bad.
It's true.
Yeah.
You find most people are happy to have a conversation when they're out. So
right.
Especially if, you know, if they're not surrounded by 10 people and you know that they actually are, although I have to say, I'm sorry to switch gears, but when you go to an art opening, it has now become an opportunity merely to converse with others and not actually look at the art. So then you have to go back to look at the art afterwards.
Right. Right. Some of them can be fun social events. And then
right.
You say, well, you know, if there weren't 30 people standing in front of this painting, I could actually see it. I'll have to come
exactly.
back tomorrow at 10.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the art openings seem to be less about the art now than they are about just reconnecting with people that you haven't seen in a while. So.
Yeah. But that's fun, too, you know, and just
it
maintaining
is.
Your connections. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So you started making connections by going to these receptions and you were talking to meeting curators, talking to galleries. Did you start to apply to galleries or was it them asking you to bring in some things? Was it the face-to-face that really helped you?
The face-to-face is absolutely the key.
Okay.
So I would say that meeting with the gallery owners when they aren't busy trying to sell the art at a reception.
Right,
so
okay.
So if they're at a reception, you really just want to introduce yourself but not try to do any kind of selling at that point.
Okay.
You're merely establishing a connection with that gallery. And then finding their Facebook page, finding their Instagram feed,
okay,
liking it, letting them get to know you by responding to them on social media, attending their events, letting them know that you aren't in a hard sell position. You're merely feeling each other out. You're
okay.
seeing if it's a good fit. You're seeing if the gallery has the kind of work that you sell. You're seeing if they're friendly and open to people at the receptions. There are so many things that you can learn from going to the receptions and also from going to the galleries when they're open without the people there. You can see how they respond to you when you walk in the door. Are they friendly? Are they interested, or do they put up a wall initially? Because a lot of galleries get so many applications or portfolios to review that they really, they aren't interested in you when you walk in the door.
And okay.
It takes repeated exposure. If you identify a gallery as one that you are really interested in, mm-hmm. you need to put some time in many cases, unless you already have, you know, a stellar reputation for sales, which, you know, most galleries need to make sales. So they're not as interested in the emerging artists.
Okay.
And if you are an emerging artist, finding connections within that gallery, if you know people who exhibit there and you
right.
go to their receptions and support them, and then it's possible that they'll introduce you to the gallery owner. But even that is really not a sure thing, because the gallery owner has to connect with your work.
Right.
And if they don't connect with your work, then you have to try to find a different gallery, because no matter how many connections you make, the bottom line is the gallery owner has to feel like they can sell it. Whether they personally like it or not,
right.
they know their market, they know their area that they reside in, and if they don't think they can sell in that market, even if they love your work, it's not going to be a good fit. So
okay.
you have to be open to the fact that that gallery owner may not like your work for their gallery.
Okay.
And just keep, you know, it has to be a more open process. Each artist has to be more, unfortunately, relaxed about it, which mm-hmm. is hard to, you know, it's hard to be relaxed when you're trying to make sales and support yourself.
Right. But
I have found that having other sources of income, such as teaching, is helpful. It takes a little bit of the pressure off in terms of, I have to make my rent, I have to get a gallery. And allows you to explore the galleries a little bit more, you know, in a relaxed manner.
Right. Because not as much pressure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, I think that's genius. That is just such a great tip for artists, because, you know, you can't force yourself on a gallery. You can't talk them into it. If it's not really a good fit, what good does it do for your artwork to be there if
Correct.
It's not the right fit?
Right.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
even if they were to take you on, even if by some means you were able to persuade them to take your work,
mm-hmm.
if they're not 100% enthusiastic about it, your work is not the work they're going to be promoting
right.
when people come in the door. And most galleries have more artists than they are capable of exhibiting at any given time. And so
okay.
if your work is mostly in storage and not out
right.
where people see it, it's not a lot better than having it in your own studio.
Right.
So it really does need to be a reciprocal relationship with the galleries. And even when you do get into a gallery, if you are under the impression that then your job is done and you can just dust your hands and say, okay, I did it, I'm in a gallery, that's not the case anymore. Most of the galleries expect you to really help market and drive people to the receptions and drive people to the gallery.
Okay.
Because they also have, let's just say each gallery that you're with has in the neighborhood of 40 artists. They don't have enough clientele to support 40 different artists.
Right.
So
okay.
they really are hoping that each artist that they bring on board will help bring new collectors to the gallery. And that those collectors, when they see other artists' work, will also be interested in some of their other artists.
Okay.
So it's a very different world, I think, than it was maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where a gallery would take you on and do, you know, tons of advertising, and they had lots of collectors with deep pockets. I don't know if there was ever a world like that outside of New York. I'm sure there are pockets where there are, you know, deep
okay.
client lists,
mm-hmm.
but most of them are hoping that you also will help bring something to the gallery. other than your artwork.
What are some of the things that you do to try to get people into the gallery?
Well, I have an email list of people that have purchased my work in the past.
Okay.
Not only the mural clients from, you know, many years ago, but also people who have purchased from me anything, you know, from a tiny little piece at a charity event to the larger pieces. And I always send out emails and then do the openings on Facebook and on Instagram to let
Great.
Other artists and collectors know that there's going to be an opening. So, and then also, you know, spreading the word around to as many people as possible. When I teach, I let my students know that there's going to be an opening and that they're welcome to bring anybody
okay.
who might have an interest in art. So mm-hmm. I do everything in my power to help the gallery also succeed. Because, you know, if the gallery doesn't succeed and it closes.
Right. Yeah.
It's a lose-lose for everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I switch gears for a little bit? Can you tell me about your teaching? Where are you teaching, and is it adults or students?
Well, right now it's just adults and in the studio attached to my home.
Okay.
It worked really nicely for me. I have a really nice group of students that have been with me for about 5 years, most of them. So.
Oh, great.
It's really lovely. And I have not spread out recently. When my children were in elementary school, I taught some after-school art classes there.
Okay.
And I had a lot of fun with those kids. At that point, they were at Beacon Cove Elementary, and I did after-school classes there. And the kids were from third grade to fifth grade. And the only problem with that class was they had been sitting down all day long.
Oh, no.
They were trying to pay attention all day. And really, when they got to my art class, it was just, you know, serious ants in their pants.
I bet.
we finally resolved it by doing jumping jacks and toe touches.
Good idea.
And probably against school rules, running around the classroom for about 10 minutes. And then I could get them settled. So.
Yeah.
And even then, it was tough because when you have a whole day of just sitting down and paying attention, it's really tough to get back into sitting down and paying attention. So
right.
I did that for 3 years. And I really enjoyed those kids, but then I thought, okay, let me just go to some adults for a while because, you know, most adults are now used to sitting down.
Right.
So, and it was a bit of a relief in that regard because people, I didn't have to get their attention to get them to learn a technique.
Oh, it good.
Mm-hmm. They were ready to learn, which was, you know, it
what
was,
a,
they
how refreshing.
Cute. They weren't as cute, but.
Right.
But they did want to pay attention.
Yeah,
so.
Good. No, I totally understand what you're talking about because my son graduated from college and he's teaching now. He's teaching fifth grade and they're just crazy.
They are crazy. They're lovable,
yeah.
But crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, he
and
loves his
kids. Fifth
grade
is tough because
oh,
they're
gosh.
Just becoming teens.
Yeah.
And so that's when they start, you know, wanting to be cool with their peers.
Right, yeah.
So that's tough. Any fifth grade through eighth grade, I think, are the toughest grades.
Right, yeah. So that's what he's experiencing. He says, he teaches history. I can't even have a conversation about something interesting because they're acting up, but anyway, but he's moved on. They and asked him to teach drama, which is much
Ooh.
More up his alley. So
fun.
He'll get them running around.
it helps anytime they can move around for sure.
Right. So, have you always taught the adults in your studio, or did you teach at some outside venues as well?
No,
just
in my studio has
Great.
Really worked nicely. When I was doing the teaching of the children, I discovered that most of the outside venues do require that you bring in your own students, and also that you pay rental fees for wherever
right.
it is teaching. Mm-hmm. And that can cut into your income quite a bit, depending
yeah.
on where you're teaching. So I haven't expanded outside of my studio at this point. I am balancing the doing my own work with that, and it's working out. Now, if it comes to a downturn in the economy again, I would be prepared to reach out a little bit and go to a different venue to teach. Increase my income. But right now, it's working out nicely.
Yeah, good, good. So you have a dedicated studio to make your art. How many students are you able to fit in there when you do a class?
8 is my limit before it becomes really challenging to walk.
Right. Do they paint on easels?
Yeah, we all have big easels.
Okay.
Any more than 8 and you're tripping over each other.
So. Yeah, yeah. But how nice that you have your dedicated studio. So at any given time, do you have multiple paintings in the works that you're working on, or do you just do one from start to finish?
I tend to do one from start to finish. Okay. When I'm in a painting, I really hate to break it up and move to a different one. I've had to a few times when I've had openings at different galleries asking me for different types of work. Each one of my galleries has their own requirement for what they think they can sell. And so I did have to break the flow a few times and carry on with a couple of different paintings. But that's really hard to do, switching gears like that.
Right. Yeah. But I'm guessing you're not taking 6 months to make a painting anymore. You must have gotten a lot quicker. You're not doing them quite as large.
Right. So I did recently sell my painting Shelter, which was almost 7 feet by 4 feet. And so that painting theoretically should allow me to do another tree-sized piece, which really is where my heart is.
Yeah.
But I switched to skies this past year.
I love your skies. Oh, my gosh, they're beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Susan. They're kind of meditative for me, and I've had a lot of personal turmoil, and it helps me to regain perspective.
Good.
Realize that we're more, less significant than we think we are. You know, shifting perspective outward and upward sometimes helps.
Good. So they came into your life at the right time.
Right. And so that's what I'm painting now. But that's, it will go back to the trees also at some point. Everything that's environmental, whether it's the skies or the water or the trees, all of these things support us in life. And so I think they're all important subjects.
Right. I have seen that you're in some environmental groups, or when you speak, environmentalism is very close to your heart. Do you think that just came from living in Florida all these years, or is that something that you had your whole life?
No, it really is more recent. I have to say, since I had children.
Okay.
And also starting the hiking and realizing that there were these beautiful places that could remain untouched if we take care of them. So it was a slow evolution.
Okay.
Because I think most people here in the United States aren't fully aware of the actions that we can take to support the environment. Most of us are in more of a consumer mode until it's brought to your attention that, oh my gosh, the plastic is completely filling our oceans. And,
oh, yeah.
And if we take all of our trees down, we are reducing their carbon mitigation. So they're in so many ways, if we can find a way to leave the wild, it will support human life, not just the animal life. If we all just think about our actions on the environment. Now, we can't control when someone comes in and takes out a huge swath of forest to build more homes or malls or business buildings. We don't have any control over that. We can be incredibly frustrated by it, but we do have control over whether we use single-use plastics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can carry a drinking water bottle with you. You can say no thank you to the straws.
Right.
and, you know, just support whatever environmental organizations who are taking on the larger issues. The National Resource Defense Council and World Wildlife Federation and all of these different organizations that fight on a larger scale can tackle the big issues. We can support them financially if we can.
Right.
And then we can do the small things that we're all capable of doing.
Right. Yeah, like going when we're out doing our hiking and our kayaking, you know, picking up trash and not leaving anything behind. Right. There's so many things that we can do.
There are. And it's frustrating, and I'm sure you feel this way also, that we can't tackle the bigger issues. Because it's not just, you know, individual people that have to act. We really do have to regulate some of the corporations that are dumping things in the water. And we have to regulate the corporations that are doing the primary polluting of the planet. But while we are waiting for that to happen, we can do, you know, tend to our own little patch, if at all possible.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you've done a wonderful thing by bringing the beauty into the world with your tree paintings. They're just amazing, and yeah, yeah. So let me go back to talking about galleries a little bit. You have your paintings at multiple galleries. Do you ever come across galleries that say, well, no, you can't have your paintings at more than one? Has that ever been a problem with you?
I have not encountered a gallery that said you can't have it elsewhere.
They
have not. The way galleries work now, I think it's rather rare for them to expect exclusivity, because then they would also be responsible for your income stream. So I really don't think, I think most galleries, as long as you're not competing with them in their own patch.
Okay.
For example, my gallery in Delray asks that I don't exhibit anywhere within 50 miles. So,
okay.
You know, and sometimes they're also negotiable about that. So, as long as you're respectful of their boundaries, most of them understand that you need to have more than one gallery in order to survive as an artist.
Right, right. And you have very distinct lines or series, I guess I should say, with your trees and with your sky paintings, you know, that can go in different galleries. How are you finding other opportunities, like some of these pop-up galleries or contests? I know you've won accolades. How do you find out about those?
So those are the local connections that were recommended to me initially. And they are very, very helpful. If you're not in a gallery, then locally exhibit. And that way the gallery owners who come to those exhibits can see your work.
Okay.
So the Cultural Council of Palm Beach really is a wonderful place to exhibit, because gallery owners regularly attend their events, and I have had several gallery owners find me at the Cultural Council.
Oh, that's great.
That is really a venue that, if you live in Palm Beach County, that is super helpful for its local artists. And then
the pop-up
galleries, Anthony and Trina do the Continuum every year.
Yep.
And a terrific venue also. But locally, if you can keep your works locally, then you don't incur the shipping charges.
Now, right, that can certainly eat into your profits. Right.
Right. And if you are a part of any larger organizations, like the National Association of Women Artists or Oil Painters of America or any of those groups, that's also a source for connections. If you decide to send your work, ship it to galleries, you know, you will incur the cost, but if you don't have other venues at the time, it is a good way to get exposure, I feel.
That's great. And what is your range right now? You live in Palm Beach County. Are you getting things in Broward County, Fort Lauderdale area, and as well as down in Miami? Do you have things in galleries down there?
Well, sadly, one of my very favorite galleries, Serona Fine Art, just closed.
Oh, darn.
they are just an absolutely amazing gallery with gorgeous international artists. Mm. And their backers decided to discontinue their support. So they are closing up shop, which is, I think, a tragedy for South Florida because they really had just exceptional artwork.
Oh, wow.
But I'm sure eventually they will be back because they originally were from New York and had run galleries there in New York. So eventually they will do something in the art world, but it's a huge loss for South Florida.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah.
But I have other galleries, one in Del Rey, one in Jupiter. He's actually looking to move. Armand Bowling is looking to move to West Palm.
Oh, that's great.
He needs a better location. He's kind of hidden away. He's got beautiful work as well and, you know, is looking to get into an area that has better traffic.
Is this the one in Jupiter?
Yes.
Okay.
And then also the May Gallery in Del Rey, they are actually closing their doors and moving next door. So they're not
right. I did hear that.
Del Rey area.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just talked to somebody else who has some pottery there. Yeah.
They're a terrific gallery. Super friendly and open to meeting all sorts of people. So they're wonderful.
That's great. I'll put the names of these galleries in the show notes so people can find your artwork that way as well. And tell me again what your website is so people can find you from your website.
It's Karen Wagner Fine Art, spelled CarinWagner, fineart.com.
Okay, great. And I'll put the links to your Facebook and Instagram where you also post things. That's wonderful. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I love hearing about how you've gotten into galleries. You seem like you were very brave at the start, just going up to New York with your paintings in tow.
I think braver is required of all of us, but definitely also try to thicken your skin up a little bit so that rejection doesn't hurt, because there is far more rejection out there initially than most of us are prepared for.
Yeah, good advice. Yeah, and I love your advice of just expanding your sources of income and for you that was going into teaching. That's wonderful, because the economy, it goes up and down, and collectors, their money that they spend on art goes up and down, and you have to be able to handle that. So very good advice.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Suzanne. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed listening to Karen Wagner talk about her artwork and how she passionately feels about the environment. She's depicted that passion in the realistic scenes of her paintings. She has great experience showing and selling her artwork, and here are some important takeaways that may help you in your business. Number one, if you take classes at an art school, see if they have lists of freelance jobs you can do. Number two, when starting a large project, like Karen did when she painted a mural on a driveway, do your research to find out the best materials for the job. Number three, find inspiration for your art in the places that really connect with you, like Karen does when she goes out hiking and kayaking and she gets inspired by nature. Number four, as she says, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Pursue multiple galleries at a time. Number five, start local and try to make connections there first. Only after that should you try to connect with the wider art world. Number six, attend gallery openings to find out what they are doing, but try to talk to the gallery owners at a later date when they are not so busy. Thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I'm Suzanne Redman. See you next time.